Good afternoon, everyone. Places, please. I'd like to call to order the System Safety and Operations Committee meeting for Thursday, June 21st, 2012. We have several permanent members of this committee that are out of town and absent. We have Director Wilson, who has a tight schedule himself but is willing to sit in for a little bit. Director Fasano also will be able to stay for a while. So, in other words, this is going to be an abbreviated version of the committee agenda. We'll try and get through the critical items as quickly as we can. I know we have law enforcement personnel and our employees of the month. We'll try and get as far as we can. We also have Director Huizar, who has a tight time budget as well.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If you'd like, I would suggest that we defer 55 and 56, because those are just information reports. I know that you have there is a time problem. Can I ask, Frank, you have a new deputy officer here. Could you introduce that person to the committee?
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'd like to introduce a few members of my team. First off, I'd like to introduce Deborah Johnson. She'll be our new Deputy Operations Chief Officer, effective next month. Deborah?
Deborah comes to us from San Francisco, but we hired her anyhow.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Alejandro, Mr. Leahy, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I'm Deborah Johnson. I'm looking forward to working here at the Los Angeles Metropolitan Transportation Authority. As indicated, I am coming from the San Francisco MTA, and I've had the pleasure of working in this great industry for over 20 years. So I want to thank you for this opportunity and look forward to working with all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we will convert her as a Dodger fan soon. Okay. Next, Mr. James.
We've got to go to action item. Sorry.
Okay, no, I have to interrupt. I do want to give – I'm not sure which item you are going to address. Okay. Presumably 54, but we're going to hold off on that.
Okay.
To accommodate Director Huizar, who has an urgent matter that he must be leaving for. But in that regard, I know he wants to be present for the discussion on item 60. And there's another motion, the Antonovich, Najarian, and Huizar motion, which we'll put immediately in front of item 60. So do you have that motion?
Yes.
Yes, I believe you have that, hopefully. This is regarding the TAP. Okay, this item is a motion requesting that the board direct the Inspector General to conduct a comprehensive audit, funding to be determined on the TAP program.
Mr. Chair, would this be through the life of the program?
We anticipate that we would. This is not for the life of the program. We want to have an audit conducted and come back to the board, and so that we could evaluate how we are doing there. So it's not the intention wasn't for the life of the program.
Not a permanent audit, but a current audit of the current condition. And the board has discussed this, and I think the more information we can get, the better, so we can make the best decisions moving forward.
Mr. Chair, the IG is not here. I don't see her, at least. Is she
here?
Okay, she may have something to say, but this is a very durable project, and I would just suggest maybe she should have the discretion to go back as far as she might think it's useful to do.
Were you able to hear that
yes.
Concern?
Yes, any flexibility that can be provided to the office in carrying out any tasks that you give us is always helpful to completing the project. So I certainly agree with Mr. Leahy's suggestion.
Okay. I think we can live with that suggestion.
To be clear, what is the suggestion?
I just would suggest that the board give the IG the discretion to structure the review as is illuminating.
Yeah. Well, you have some suggestions here, and I would suspect that if any of these suggestions cannot be fulfilled, you'll let the board know, correct, in terms of what you can and cannot perform.
Yes, the motion, as I see it, calls for a preliminary report back in October. So if prior to that time we need to make any maybe adjustments based upon the results that we're finding, I'll be happy to make a further report at that time, or if not in October, as to where we are with the matter and any modifications that we're suggesting.
Thank you. So, Mr. Chair, I suggest we move forward with this, and as the Inspector General has noted, if there are any things we need to be aware of or things that may have to change in this directive, that she'll come back to us and let us know.
I think she's a welcome face at the board, at behind the podium or
thank
at
you.
The side. And, yeah, should there be any issues that you think the board needs or the committee needs to know about or the CEO, please let us know, let us all know as appropriate, and we'll help resolve any of those issues that you think come up.
Very good, sir. We'll do our best to carry this task out for you.
Thank you. Is there a motion then?
I'd like to move the report, Mr. Chair, along with the motion.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you. Any objections? Okay, that item passes. Let's move to item 60.
Okay. Item 60 is a request to authorize the CEO to negotiate and execute a one-year extension of our system maintenance contract with Cubic Transportation Systems in the amount not to exceed $9 million. And item B is to sit down. Is to approve contract modification authority in the amount of $1 million for the entire contract.
The only question I have is the item B, the additional funding of $1 million for unanticipated changes. Do you think that's the most prudent way to deal with any possible cost overrun issues?
These are not for cost overruns, sir.
Well,
there are
unanticipated change orders or change of scope, expansion of scope, or...
As we distributed earlier, I believe at the end of last week, is a list of pending changes that we are aware of, and I will ask Don Dwyer, who is our procurement officer, to speak to those individually. None of them are huge, so that we would prefer that efficiency-wise at the board level that authorization be delegated to staff. But Don?
Good afternoon.
Hi.
The Universal Fare System contract, of which the system support services part of it is actually a modification to that contract, has been going on for approximately 10 years. During that 10-year period, we've processed nearly 90 modifications. These modifications have everything to do with adding equipment as new rail lines come on service to the relocating of equipment. There's software changes that occur. There are a number of things that happen on the system. The system is an active system and a dynamic system. And I identified for the board a number of changes that are currently pending additional contract modification authority. And until we get additional funding, we cannot process those changes. This is a normal course of business occurrence, and although I do not create the requirements, I do process the paperwork.
Well, let me just say, and I don't think I'm overstating the fact that board has become very sensitive to any additional costs that are being put into this, and it's always with a little bit of hesitancy that I look to and approve any additional funding that are on its face vague in terms of what it's going to go to. So I'm not sure this is the appropriate time to get into it in detail. Any directors have any comments on that? I mean, does anyone share my hesitancy? I mean, it's just a little bit of hesitancy, I think. Mr. Pisana.
You know, I certainly understand the hesitancy. At the same time, I'm not sure what the consequences are of not approving the item two. But I think there's certainly an issue in terms of the audit of really looking at the long-term viability, even seeing whether we're on a sustainable path or whether we're going to have to bite the bullet and figure something else out, recognizing the tremendous resources that have been put into this and the expectations we had and that they've fallen short. So I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether we need to still put something in or...
Alternatively, we could bring you the items one at a time. However, they would be fairly low dollar value individually relative to this contract, and our recommendation is that we don't feel that that's an effective use of the board's time.
I would be willing to trade off a series of rather mundane and small amount increases that are specified rather than be seen as just dumping more money in without an itemization. If you're okay to do that, speaking for myself, perhaps my colleagues as well, that I think that's a decision that we're willing to make in terms of going through them, as you said, smaller amounts, perhaps a series of many items that hopefully we can get through. And at least as the public looks on, they'll see, well, the public board and staff to say, well, I see where this money's going to, and we'll get a greater sense of confidence. I think we need to start building confidence no matter what else happens to TAP. I think we need to get a sense of confidence as an agency that, yes, we're moving forward in the right direction and being as careful as we can with each step along the way. So, Mr. Wilson.
Yes. Mr. Matsumoto, I'm just trying to get my hands around this,
okay,
this motion here. This contract started about 3 years ago, and it was originally $160,000. Was that the original contract amount?
No, sir.
How much was it originally?
Don can give you the original
Don,
contract.
Can you help us with that?
Sure. The original contract was about $86 million. With about $5 million modification authority attached to it. That was, like I said, about 10 years ago. About 3 years ago, we had exhausted the maintenance portion of the original contract and needed to continue with what we now call system support services, which include equipment maintenance, software maintenance, upgrading of equipment, and a number of other items. And that, I don't recall the exact number of that modification, but we have now, that was for a 3-year period, and we still have a system to support and maintain, so this 1-year extension is for that.
How many times has this contract been modified?
This contract has been modified, the overall contract, over 90 times.
90?
90, yes, sir.
90,
that is correct.
And it started out at $86 million?
That is correct.
Now we're double that?
That is correct.
Do you feel like we're getting our money's worth out of this?
Every modification that I process, I review the cost data to make sure that we're paying fair and reasonable pricing. You have to understand this system is a dynamic system that is going to, that has grown in the past and will continue to grow. It is a system that integrates not only all the fare collection equipment within the metro system, but also integrating the regional fare collection equipment The regional partners, the municipal operators, sometimes have their own unique demands and requirements and needs, and it is a daunting task and requires quite a bit of attention.
Has this contract ever been put out to bid so that other contractors could compete for this? I mean, was the original contract date 2009?
The original contract date was the year 2002, I believe.
So that's 10 years, as you said earlier. Thank you. Yes. You did say that. So my question is, since that 10-year period has gone by, has there been any other opportunities for other contractors to compete for this body of work?
There is not. At the time we purchased the system, which is a combination of fare boxes and fare boxes and ticket vending machines, we did a competitive competition. This was 10 years ago. There were two proposers. We selected the most qualified, and it happened to be the least expensive of the proposers. This is, at the time we purchased the system, and to my knowledge, still remains the only systems out there are pretty much proprietary systems. You've got a very complex central computer behind the equipment that is a proprietary to each of the equipment vendors, and there just is not opportunities to outsource equipment. It becomes very complex when you try and integrate other vendors' equipment into a proprietary software system.
So this is almost like, in essence, a sole source contract.
That is correct.
That's a pretty good gig. $86 million to $160
million? You don't want an answer for that.
All right.
Let me go to Director Fasana.
Just, in terms of comments, some of the changes that have been made to this contract were directed by the board. You know, many of us did not want gating, but Director Katz insisted on adding gating, so we augmented that to the contract, much to all our dismay. No, seriously, actually, he was the lone holdout on that. And in hindsight, he was probably, or quite possibly correct, but at this point, I think it is what it is.
He didn't mean that. It's Mr. Director Katz on the phone.
Yeah.
He didn't mean
that.
Thank you. We'll get back to
that. I mean, originally, we looked at this in a different frame. It was a different time. It's been many years since this was issued. I think as we look at the audits and what's going forward, at some point it's probably worth looking at the overall lens again to see how far have we gotten and are there other approaches that are out there that might be more competitive based on what's available today. You know, part of me almost says to approve this at this point, given what is before us. If the board wants to break it apart incrementally, they can, and I certainly respect that. To move things along one direction or not, I'll just make a motion to approve this as recommended. So moved.
My suggestion, directors, is to bifurcate this and to move item A, 60A, and then to take 60B separately. I think we've got a little bit of a difference of opinion. But before we take a vote, we have a request by Kimberly Richards.
I'm willing to move A too at that appropriate
okay.
time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize I wanted to speak midway through this discussion. First of all, Director Katz wasn't the only holdout about the gates. I was opposed to them as well, and for whatever that's worth. But as far as all of this is concerned, I think I can probably sum this up very briefly. 10 years, more than 90 contract modifications, and it still doesn't work.
I'll move A.
Is there a second for A? Director Wilson?
Would you like it?
Yeah, let's move A forward. With no objection, 60A will be approved. 60B, I think I'm sensing a little difference of opinion. Why don't we just move that to the full board? It would be my...
Can I just come back, given the way the full board agenda is probably going to be? Does it have to be this month, the additional authority for B?
The modification authority, no. It's been...
If B is delayed till July, it's okay.
Yes.
Okay, we will... Then let's take no action on 60B. Thank you. No. No, we're not going to take that to the full board. Okay, let's go to 66.
Guys, make it really quick, okay?
Okay.
67.
Good afternoon. Vijay Kamani with Corporate Safety Executive Officer. This month we have a presentation on the red light photo enforcement program, and this report presents a five-month evaluation that was conducted from the months of August through December of 2011. The quick background on this, in July of last year, the city of Los Angeles terminated their red light photo enforcement program.
Hey, we're really in a crunch for time here, so
we're
going to
supersede
right to
the regularly programmed agenda item. So I'm going to ask you please to hold off, and we have an item 56 that needs a quorum. I understand we have a presenter from out of state.
Right.
Not 56, I'm sorry.
61.
Which one was that, Art?
Yeah, 61. Item 61, please, really fast.
61,
yes. I'm pleased to introduce Mr. Howard Roberts.
Forgive me. Yeah, okay, that's good. Let's get right to it. We're out of time. Howard, could you come
right to it.
Okay.
Come on up, sir. We usually have a little more time, but we're losing our quorum, and we'd like your...
Howard's a longtime transit guy. Worked in some small places back east, New York and Philadelphia, but he's here anyway, just like Deborah. I'm sorry, Howard. Hit the high points.
I will certainly hit the high points. Sam Swartz Engineering was asked to do a study of the state of safety culture at L.A. Metro. This was a motion introduced by Director Antonovich and passed by the MTA board. The approach was the conventional approach. These are the primary documents that we read and analyzed survey statistics. We got 745 responses to a survey on safety culture. That was about 12% representation. That we would have liked for that to have been higher, but it was a entirely voluntary survey. There are statistics showing the participation by other groups of employees. In the group discussions, we had all the major hourly titles represented, no managers or supervisors, and hit a very significant sample of the operations department. This is Udall's definition of safety culture. It's probably one of the best of thousands that are out there. There is an Irish proverb, though, that says paper never refused ink. What that means is you can write the greatest rule book in the world, but if it just goes on the shelf, it's absolutely worthless. The trick is getting the rule book into employees' heads, and that's what safety culture is basically about. These are the five elements of the reason model. Informed culture is how well does an organization collect and analyze data and process it. Here are some of the survey results. In response to my manager, supervisor does not always inform me of everything I need to know about safety problems that might affect me. 60% disagreed or strongly disagreed with that, which indicates that there is a significant amount of information flowing. In response to, would you say Metro ensures that you understand the risk and the rationale behind the safety rules that apply to your workplace, 71% said yes. We had very similar examples. In the discussion groups, the focus was what's wrong, what needs to be fixed. I just highlight a couple of the comments here. Recommendations with respect to informed culture is you got to get a comprehensive report out to employees.
Excuse me, Howard?
Yeah.
I think the committee is interested in hearing this, and they don't want to rush it. Can we impose upon you to come back with us at a future meeting, please?
Sure.
All right. Absolutely. I appreciate that. Can I ask the committee refer item 58 to the board with or without a recommendation? That's an important procurement item.
58 LEDs. Requests to move it to the board?
Yeah, it's just lights in the subway tunnel, which is a safety issue.
Any objection to moving 58 to the full board?
No. Let's move approval of the item.
Yeah.
Move approval.
Second?
Second.
Yeah, it's lights and
approve the item.
It's comply with the fire department's requirements for lighting.
Right. It'll be on consent, though. It can be pulled for discussion.
It can be pulled?
At the full board, it can.
If we have a moment, then we have a few employees of the month here.
Just move the item, refer it to the full board without recommendation so that we can pull it off the consent agenda, please.
I will cede to that request.
Thank you.
Okay, with no objection. 58 is moving to the board with no recommendation.
Thank board you. Meeting starting at 3 a.m., right?
No, we get out at 3 a.m.
Okay. Mr. Leahy, is there another request for priority?
We have a few employees a month, please. This is very important to recognize. We have some really good employees here. So Mr. Stange, who's the new director of equipment maintenance.
Good afternoon, directors, chairman. Mr. Leahy.
Afternoon.
I would like to introduce Mike Stange. I'd like to introduce Lauren Rees as the maintenance employee of the month. Lauren is a mechanic A leader at Division 10. He has 28 years with the company, married for 25 years, has one daughter, two sons, and one grandson. A couple days ago, I had the opportunity to speak with Lauren one-on-one, and I talked to him. Since I started as a mechanic, I could talk to him about mechanical things. So he shared all of the new technology with me, got into the first shift operation, second and third shift, told me all the things about what was right with Metro, the MTA, the division, et cetera, et cetera. At any rate, this man is a wealth of knowledge. It was a pleasure meeting him in more depth and in more detail, and I fully understand why he was selected by the Division 10 manager as Employee of the Month. He has he's just a wonderful individual, and it is my pleasure to introduce Lauren Reeves.
Thank you, Board. I'm just honored to receive this award. The Lord blessed me with a job 28 years ago with RQD. I started with Division 12, and 2 weeks later, they informed me that I was going to Division 10, a new division in East LA. I've been at Division 10 ever since, and RTD or MTA has given me many opportunities, and one I'm very grateful for is I was able to get married 25 years ago and raise a family and with three kids and a grandchild. People ask me what makes me happy at Division 10. It's just the people. They just make me happy there. They're hard workers, they're dedicated, and they're also my extended family. 28 years ago, I wasn't happy having to leave Division 12, but at Division 10 now, I'm very happy, and I would probably never leave. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Item 67.
I'll move approval of the service sector nominations as presented to the committee.
Second by Director Wilson. No objections. That will be the order. Okay, we just lost our quorum. What can we do?
I can do CEO's report.
Let's do the CEO's report. How about the lamps? Do we want the lamps report? Let's go to the CEO's report.
I just want to let you know that just a little preview for the my expected result for the end of the year, end of the fiscal year, end of this month. We will pass 100 million boardings on our rail lines for the first time in our modern history. The year ending in a few weeks has the Gold Line, the Blue Line, and the Green Line all establishing all-time highs. The subway will tie its previous all-time high, which was 2010. As the board knows, we've been investing in maintenance and on-time service and improving our service midday and nighttime, and so I'm happy with the results. Bus ridership is also up, not quite as much as rail, but the system is going in the right direction. With that, I will close by noting that we opened up the Culver City Station on the Expo Line yesterday, and so now people have easy access to USC games at the Coliseum.
From the West Side. The West Siders can see a real football team. Is that what you mean to say? Okay, thank you. Mr. Leahy, what can we do? Can we do 62? Receive and file? Do we need a quorum for our receiving?
You don't need a quorum. It's a status report, as is 63.
Supervisor Canabi wanted to be here.
Okay. I do understand that Supervisor Canabi wanted to be present during this presentation, so let's put this over to next. Let's put this over to next month's committee. Can we do 63?
Yes, sir.
63, please.
Sorry for the back and forth, guys.
Yes. This is the quarterly report that was mandated by the board from as an independent bus service quality report that is prepared by John Hilmer, who's our director of the regional service councils. John's out of town today, and I'm covering the report for him. There are a number of items in the report, the written report that's been submitted, that I'll recap here and just talk about what's good and what's not so good. And our chief operations officer, Frank Alejandro, may want to comment on the good things and the bad things and what he's doing about both. With regard to on-time performance, it's interesting to note that while we're well below the goal of 85% for the bus service, that running ahead of schedule, which is a serious crime for bus operations, is down to 3%. Which is better than the average of 14%, which we were seeing about 4 years ago. The next slide is customer complaints, running about 3.3%, which is short of our goal of 3.3 per 100,000 passengers. So about 3 people out of 100,000 have a complaint. Our goal is to have it be closer to 2 people out of a 100,000 having a complaint. And the types of complaints that they are most often offered is either bus was late or issues with operator conduct, both of which may relate to the on-time performance that we looked at earlier. The next slide has to do with bus reliability as measured by the miles between mechanical road calls. And here we are ahead of the target here a higher number is better because it means we run more miles between times the buses break down. The next slide is bus cleanliness. Our target is an 8 on a 10 on a scale of 10, and year to date we're running 8.4, so we're ahead of the game on cleanliness. Traffic accidents. Our target here is to have about 3.1 accidents, traffic accidents, for every 100,000 miles the buses operate. We're year to date running 3.7. But note that in April we were close to the 3.1 at 3.2. Next slide. It measures trips with standees. 76% of the 95,000 bus trips in April had no standees, and we're running about 3% of our trips with standees. Next slide is bus station cleanliness. And here, we give letter grades to the cleanliness of the stations that out of which we operate our buses. This is not all of them, but it's a representative sample, and it includes the four that were given a grade of D for the month of April. You can see the changes from December to April, and I can assure you that this is a grading that Frank Alejandro and his team are taking very seriously. And Frank, did you want to?
Yeah, I got the mic. Thank you.
Sure. Regarding the unsatisfactory rating of those four stations at a D rating, that is unacceptable, and we understand that. We have taken quick, serious action on the Artesia LAX bus terminal, the South Bay Galleria bus terminal, and Universal City. I can read the list, however, it's a little lengthy. I will share with the board that we have extensively cleaned up trash. We have painted curbs. We have removed foreign material such as mattresses, etc. We have removed graffiti, and we are pressure washing most all of those systems. We have completed the pressure washing with just one remaining. And lastly, within the next 2 weeks, we will have all those areas replanted in some areas, and there is a landscaping program which we are starting to develop and will start occurring June 20th. And so with all of that, I'm very confident at this point in time, if those four stations were to be reinspected, they would be rated at a C plus to possibly a B minus at this point in time.
Okay, thanks, Mike.
Director Fasano?
Yes, I'm going to follow up, and most of these stations I haven't been to in part of the last several years, but I will point out that if we wish to enjoy the support of our public, the quality of the station cleanliness just flat out has to improve. It's unacceptable to see that level of decay, and I have seen in some of the stations the greenery, and I recognize that there are funding and budget issues involved too, but in terms of maintaining public-wide support for our system, whether it be rail or bus, cleanliness is absolutely critical. So I would expect that we not see below average, let alone failing grades in the future on this. It's absolutely critical for the success of our mission.
Clearly understood.
Thank you.
And although it's not a D, our C minus at Petsuras Plaza, wow, that's our backyard.
Yes, sir. So. And we've not only taken a hard look at the D ratings, we looked at all of the ratings. We have developed a plan. We have programs in place which we will solidify very quickly into much more manageable programs and plans, and we will raise those C's to C pluses and B's very quickly.
Okay, we'll see you next quarter with those words ringing in our ears.
Yes, sir.
Okay, now, Mr. Chairman and Director Fasana, moving on to the ADA-related complaint trends. In April, there were 214 under. I'm sorry. In April, the trend line is slightly up for both. The 9 wheelchair pass-up complaints received in April is equal to the lowest number we've had in 4 years, which is one bit of good news out of this. The next slide relates to the mystery rider observations, which is particularly interesting with regard to the wheelchair pass-ups. In this case, there were 214 undercover rides that were made on Metro bus service. 82 wheelchair passengers were served on these trips, with one being passed up. Now, one being passed up is one too many, but the reason for that pass-up was there were already two wheelchair passengers on board. We don't have a way to safely secure more than two, and the operator did stop, explain to the waiting passenger the situation, and tell the passenger when the next contacted bus control and told the passenger when the next bus with space for securement would be coming. Of the 214 trips, 99% were rated by the mystery rider as providing courteous and respectful service to all of their customers. Next slide.
I want to express appreciation to our operators for obviously delivering great service out there and providing the appropriate service to our customers. So I think that can't go unnoticed. That's really an excellent statistic and great service.
Well, you may remember there was a lawsuit a few years ago, and you know, about two and a half years ago, we undertook a major training program, and Richard Hunt was involved in it, and many other people. But what you're seeing is the result of that, of a major effort.
Finally, I have a slide on the annual passenger survey, which is conducted in May of each year, and what we intend to do is to also do to quarterly update the survey. The more significant shifts that we've seen in the survey were one troubling one that 23% up from 19% of our riders who responded to the survey said they experienced a bus breakdown in the last month. And so that's a message to our maintenance people to improve our bus maintenance. The average wait time for a bus decreased a little bit from 11 and a half minutes to about 11 minutes. The average tap card usage increased to 63% of our patrons from 57%. And perhaps even most interesting of all this, 53% of our passengers now have smartphones, up from 38% last year. So this is telling us how we're able to better communicate with our passengers. We have an app for smartphones that tells you when buses are coming and things like that. So it's called
Next Bus?
Next Trip, I think we call it, something like that, because it applies to rail as well as bus. So anyway, we're finding that smartphone penetration among our rider base is growing, and it provides us a more powerful tool every month.
It has fare collection implications as well that could be extremely positive, that I don't think we had this type of capability when we first entered into TAP. It would seem like...
Yes, technology is rapidly advancing on all fronts, including fare collection. So there will be a quarterly report brought to you again in September with an update on all of these, and Mr. Stange will show his face proudly with no bus stations in the C-minus or D at all. That completes this report.
Thank you very much. Can we do 64?
That's good, thanks. Robin Blair from Planning. This report is in response to a motion by the board. It's actually two motions, one going back to the original establishment of a parking policy, which asks for continued updates on the usage of the parking, And the second is in February 23rd, item number 3, which is to conduct a parking space utilization study and recommend strategies to increase the utilization. This is a brief summary of that. If I can, just briefly, history-wise, in about 1988 up to 1990, we, as Metro, had about 2,000 spaces located in the El Monte Transit, the transit station. As of 2011, when we did the last comprehensive study, which is in the summer, there were about 20,000 spaces. We have also partner funded or participated in 65,000 parking spaces throughout the county, and there are various ways that we have done that. And as I go forward, I'd just like to acknowledge there was some great staff working on this. We had a chance to use some of our high school and college interns during the summer to go out to each of the sites and look at, in a very short period of time, at all of the sites at the same time of the year, same time of the day or the week. The overview, 93 stations, 43 of them with parking. About 8,100 of them are spaces owned by Caltrans, such as the El Monte Transit Station is actually a Caltrans-owned property. We do control it and maintain it. We have added in this year, in 2012, another 2,000 spaces as part of the expo and some of the work also with the Orange Line. We have about 3,000 spaces also under construction as part of projects today. Methodology, briefly, is that we did the assessment along the Orange and Silver Lines and as well as the Metro Rail. And we looked at the summer months of June through August in 2007, 8, and 11. We have continued to gather information each of these every other year or every year or so. We try and measure between 8:30 a.m. and 11 a.m. That's our peak usage. And we do it Tuesday through Thursday of non-holiday weeks in order to make sure that we are consistent in how people are using the parking spaces. Again, briefly, going over from 2007 to 2011, we've gone from about 75 to 81% on the blue line. Part of that has to do with the limitations of the any available parking, areas that have already peaked, have no more capacity, of course. And going all the way through the system, we've come from about 2007, 56%, to today around 63% in 2011. The preliminary work in 2012 is showing that we are increasing again so that the numbers are on the rise again based upon gasoline prices primarily, and we've seen some drops, of course, originally because of unemployment that has risen over the last few years. The next steps, one of the emphasis that we have here is to increase the or improve the wayfinding signage and connections from the stations to the outlying communities, improving the pedestrian and bicycle connections. We are also encouraging the usage of innovative technology such as variable message signs, ways to help the public get to our facilities or to accommodate a change in our operations. You've already seen the increase in maintenance efforts. That's part of the efforts that are going on here. The report does reflect that as well. And, of course, to continue to work with Caltrans to acquire 41 lots. This will be in addition to lots that we have. Some of them are overlapping as well. The entire comprehensive report, which is over 300 pages, is available in a hard copy. We also have it, for practical reasons, online. It's attached through the library, and all that information is available.
Director Vasana?
You know, I noticed in the report there is a question or a comment about paid parking. I think the only thing possibly worse than our fare box recovery might be the recovery in terms of the cost of building parking structures to support all these rail and fixed route transit systems that we operate. So my question is, how many spaces as a percentage do we even charge for parking, knowing that we're not charging the actual cost of providing it?
I'm sorry, again, you're saying what percentage of all of our parking or specific sites? Or
of all our parking is paid.
I can't give you a hard number without going back through, but I can give you some locations such as here at Union Station or Sierra Madre in places like North Hollywood and Universal. In the case of Union Station, obviously it's 100%. It is the most expensive parking that we have to build, and it is the functionally the easiest to control for paid parking. We go to places like Sierra Madre where we have probably less than 100 that are set for payment, which is about 10% of the parking that is there. We have moderate demand for payment where we've looked at the public's willingness to pay. Sierra Madre may not be the ideal location given that the Gold Line is extending. farther out, and so today it's an intercept, but over time it will actually diminish in demand as there are better ways to get off the freeway as the foothill system goes out. In North Hollywood, and again the numbers are reflected here, North Hollywood as a collector probably has the ability of increasing the number of parking, paid parking, substantially. But we did have this conversation with the board some years ago where they had asked, at least part of the conversation was that are we making those that use transit pay, and is it penalizing those that are trying to get onto the system versus the surrounding freeway system as well. So I can get you a number, Director, and comprehensively.
I appreciate that. And I think what I would suggest is I think the whole view about what people pay to use different systems, it would seem that for a lot of people that would use spaces at these parking lots, if you have excess capacity, then maybe free works at this point because there's limited demand. But in areas where we are hitting the peak, where people aren't as sure about receiving or having a space available, it would seem to be that paying would offer more predictability in terms of availability. I mean, it's really similar to the congestion pricing activities that we're looking at this point. And again, I think just looking at the fact that we have scarce resources, do we want to build transit or do we want to try and build parking lots? And I think trying to minimize parking lots or at least get some sense of what the demand is and the recovery ability on that, to me, becomes important. I think always, rather than presuming that an area requires parking, this really gets into station planning before we open a station a couple years in advance. Are we really going out into the neighborhoods doing a grassroots approach to really determine if there's other ways rather than the station popping up one day with a parking lot? Is there advanced planning that can take place to really try and manage that demand? So I only throw those ideas out there. Parking is extremely costly. I've heard $30,000 a space for structures. So as we look at major R availability, so we can extend that goal line all the way out to Claremont, this becomes one area that maybe we can look at. So I appreciate the report.
I like the idea of looking into additional use of the resources through a pay system. Those that really need the space should have a space available, those that can find alternative ways or perhaps biking. So I'm not sure. Maybe we can come back with a discussion on that next committee meeting as to the impact of increased use of pay parking. I'm talking nominal, obviously, at first, to see what sort of impact that would have on the demand for parking in those, because each parking space, should we construct it, has to be at least $10,000, $15,000, I'm thinking. I think that's about what it pencils out to if you include everything. And if we can encourage those that can avoid driving their car to the station, either carpooling or bicycling or walking or a bus if necessary, that we should encourage that, because parking isn't free for us. And as Mr. Fasano said, we should be in the business of building a transit system, not building free parking spots.
Mr. Chairman, it might be useful for us to bring back to you kind of a summary of the last 40 years of what's happened in Washington, D.C., and in the hated Bay Area, because, you know, they're a few decades ahead of us, but, you know, they've had parking lots that have changed over time, and there's been more TOD in their parking lots, and they're charging more at certain locations. It's kind of they're kind of ahead of us, so we can see the future by looking at what they've done.
I think it'd be useful to at least look at that and start to think about how that would affect our system and our parking demand and supply. Thank you. Now, we have a couple items that needed a vote by the committee. Item 68 was one of them. I'd like to move that to the full board. There was another one, Mr. Leahy. Okay, everything that we didn't take action on, let's move that to the full board. Thank rather you. Than bring it back to the next committee
Thanks.
Cycle. We have the, I know law enforcement is here. Is that the next in order? Traveler's Aid? Let's go to Traveler's Aid, and then we'll go to the lamps. So Traveler's Aid, item 65.
Good afternoon. I'm Cosette Stark. I'm just providing an update on the Traveler's Aid item. In February, the board had approved a motion requesting that staff look into viable options for providing free information services at Union Station that had previously been provided by the Traveler's Aid Society of Southern California, and because that group had disbanded. The Joint Management Council that manages Union Station property as well as the Gateway property put out a solicitation asking for proposals from entities or organizations that were willing to provide that service, provide free information services in Union Station. And there's a booth located right by, right near the Alameda entrance that was had been used before. Proposals were received in May, and a selection has been made. They selected, or they had awarded a contract to the LA Visitors Bureau, and the booth is scheduled to be operational on Monday. So we're happy that that's working. And they've also met with the volunteers of the Travelers Aid Society yesterday, so they're going to be working with those volunteers as well.
Okay. Thank you. Good news. Item 57, lamps.
Good afternoon.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Director, Ms. Lee. I'd like to introduce Acting Commander Captain Holly Perez from TSB South. Commander Jordan's en route back from Washington today, so Holly's going to do the presentation of the LAMPS report.
All right. This slide is the year-to-year comparison for the Part 1 crimes. We're down a little bit this year, actually four Part 1 crimes from last year to this year. And as it shows on the left-hand side of the slide, the what the Part 1 crimes are. We had a slight uptick in robberies over the past, I'd say, 6 to 8 weeks, culminating in an arrest this morning where we had several armed robberies that were happening between about 4:30 in the morning and about 6:30 in the morning. We had very good video footage on the suspect. We worked up a package, moved some resources around this morning. The deputies were working undercover from about 2 o'clock this morning on. I got the call at 3:40 this morning that the suspect had been arrested.
And where was this at? Which
he was actually arrested at Olympic and Grand.
And the robberies were?
The robberies were along the red line. What was interesting about that was there would be a series of robberies and then about a 10-day break and then another series of robberies. And this time there was another 10-day break. On the 19th, we had one on the red line at about 4:30 in the morning and then one at Pico on the blue line at about 6 o'clock. Same suspect description. So we wanted to get on it right away and track him down. He basically walked into the deputy's arms this morning. So it was good. It was great. We're also working with L.A.
I mean, they ran into each other?
Yes,
you.
Actually, yes. They were at the Shell station there on the corner. Suspect comes around the corner, looks at them, walks on into the store. He dumped his handgun in the store behind some potato chips. And they snatched him as he walked out of the doors. And then the store owner said, well, he was back here for quite a while, and they found the gun.
Wow. Great.
He's on probation for drug sales and also having a gun in the past. So that was leading into the arrest slide, which is the next slide. The arrests are up year to year. but down a little bit the past couple of months. But that's arrests for everything, Part 1 and Part 2 crimes. So we haven't been arresting as many for misdemeanor warrants and things like that. The next slide is the citations in, did you tell me February, Dwayne?
February 27th.
February 27th, we started the administrative citations. You see the two little spikes there. Towards the end of the year, we were telling everybody to get their sites turned in and finish up using those site books. So there was a huge spike December and January, writing citations on the old sites. And then also right after we started the administrative sites, the citation numbers went up because people were turning in their sites from the old sites. They're down a little with the administrative sites, but I think that's going to come back up. And then calls for service, as you see in the past few weeks, actually right after the bus operator was assaulted, we had a huge uptick in calls for service. And we attribute that to people being a little antsy and a little more cognizant of their surroundings. And anybody that was acting out of character or even looked a little bit suspicious, we were getting a lot of calls about that. And our response times, you know, that's the 10, 20, 30, so we are well under the barometer for our response times. And the next slide is the expo stats, since that's the new line, and now that we're open all the way to Culver City. Most of those felony arrests that you see indicated up there have been for drug possession, a few weapons violations, but it's been relatively quiet out there. I hesitate to say that, but now that Culver City's open, I think we'll see a little bit of a trend, more ridership, and with that comes a little probably people being victimized, but we're going to take care of that. Citations, that's just for this month period, month and a couple of days period, citations issued. To date, we've had approximately 3,000 citations issued out there. And then right after Mr. Thomas was shot, we did a 20-day program on the buses just to have more visibility out there, let the drivers know we were out and about, and that this slide indicates what we've done or what we've arrested and contacts we've made in that 20-day period. We had as you see at the bottom, approximately 504 shift positions. That's the 8-hour shifts. So about 25 additional people a day, days and PMs out there on the buses, actually riding the buses, boarding the buses, contacting the operators, and checking the passengers. Are there any questions?
Director Bassano?
Yeah, just quickly, I know there was a slide in terms of response times, and I'm not asking for response now, but I think the different types of, you know, priority versus, I don't recall what the three classifications.
Emergent, priority, and routine.
At some point, I would be interested, and maybe it's a closed session item, of just more description about what those types of categorizations really mean, so I could have maybe better judgment on the time involved.
It's an easy answer if you'd like it now.
Sure.
The emergent is usually a crime in progress.
Okay.
The priority is just occurred or something that's happened being reported. There's a suspect description. There's something workable. So we want to get there quickly, but not necessarily code 3. And then a routine is usually a report call.
Again, the amount of time and trying to determine what an appropriate level of time is for the various incidents. So.
The
response now, but that's
okay.
In the back of my mind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Sorry. I think that just about completes our agenda. Is there any public request for public speaking? Did we miss anyone? Sorry, we jumped around quite a bit. I apologize. It's not the way I like to run the committee, but we were losing our quorum. Since we dropped the quorum about a half hour ago, we don't need to adjourn. We're just going to get up and leave. So goodbye, everyone.